Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. This is Chris, and on this episode, we have a very special guest here to discuss a topic a lot of you are curious about and writing me emails about. You'll find all the notes for this show and a complete podcast archive over at pleasuremechanics.com. Our guest today is Cooper S. Beckett. Cooper is the founder of LifeOnTheSwingSet.com and host of its Swinging and Polyamory podcasts. He speaks and teaches classes on pegging, swinging, polyamory, play parties, and non-monogamy. He has written two books, My Life on the Swing Set, Adventures in Swinging and Polyamory, and a very new novel, hot off the presses, about swinging, called A Life Less Monogamous. Cooper, welcome to Speaking of Sex.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to ask you to quickly define a few terms, and then I want to dive into your story. But get us started. Talk about what is swinging versus polyamory. How are they different?
Well, I am of the opinion that they are like two ends of a spectrum, sort of like the Kinsey scale of sexuality. On one end, you've got traditional swinging, which by and large is couples participating in extra relationship sexual encounters where everybody knows what's going on.
Okay.
And on the other end, you've got polyamory, which is couples or singles. It's less, I don't want to say rigid, but it's more nebulous. Couples and singles that are dating multiple people at the same time with romantic interests. So then in the middle is the blend area. And I feel there's a lot more overlap than either side will readily admit because they like to snipe at each other. But there are a lot of swingers developing strong relationships with their playmates, and there are a lot of poly people having casual sex, which just sort of meets in the middle. But the important term is ethical non-monogamy.
Mm.
And ethical non-monogamy is the part where everybody knows what's going on and has opted into being a part of that relationship.
As opposed to cheating.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people in non-monogamous relationships that don't know they're in non-monogamous relationships, right? So the ethical part is the most important part of this lifestyle.
And from there, it's a do-it-yourself adventure.
Indeed.
All right. So how did you get started into non-monogamy?
Well, I got started because, I'm divorced, and my divorce had nothing to do with our non-monogamous relationship. I like to put that out up front.
Yes.
So I disclose. But before, you know, like 4.5 years before my divorce, my marriage was really, really close to ending because both of us had very, very little sexual experience in our lives and wanted to fuck other people. And we were doing the traditional thing of not talking to each other about it, you know, just angsting all about it.
Uh-huh.
And that was steadily ruining our relationship. And then when we did talk about it, we had no outlet for that. We thought, well, I guess that means we get divorced and go and have sex with other people then, right? Because neither of us wanted to cheat. But then ultimately, neither of us wanted to get divorced. So we started to explore this at one point joke of, well, there's always swinging. And that opened the door to this amazing relationship style, this amazing community of people, and really changed the way I view the world almost entirely.
Mm. And you chronicle this adventure in your first book.
I do.
And it's kind of a mix of how-to and advice along with stories from your adventures, which is a great blend. It makes it super readable and kind of gives context to some of your advice. But for people who haven't read the book yet, what was that first step you took? So how did it go from a joke to a reality?
Well, I like to say we got bullied into our first date, but then I feel I need to contextualize that as we didn't actually get bullied. But we set up a profile on an online dating site, a swinger dating site, and got contacted right away because newbies are popular. And we're proposed a date, and we did the standard shy thing of, yeah, maybe in a couple weeks. And they said, well, what are you doing tonight? And we weren't doing anything. And so they said, no, we'll go on a date tonight.
Wow.
And we freaked out because that meant this was real. This wasn't just a game we were playing. And went and had a lovely time. We didn't do anything that night, but we made another date for the next week. And that was when the first sexual encounter happened. And it was our first sexual encounter outside our relationship, her first ever, my first in almost 15 years at that point. And it was really a wonderful introduction to the lifestyle.
So along your adventures, what was one of the most surprising things you discovered, either about yourself or about sexuality, that you hadn't been expecting?
Well, I'd always suspected I was some version of bisexual. Of course, when I was married, I was always rather just worried that I might be gay and have not told myself about it. So exploring that was a wonderful thing. The most surprising thing about non-monogamy is how touch-starved monogamous people are.
That's a phrase we use a lot here at Pleasure Mechanics.
It's amazing because you don't think about it. I mean, you think you get enough touch from your partner, but really, it can be even all of the touch from your partner, and you still don't have enough. And it's because we've created this unsafe environment for touch, where we have these bubbles of security around us. And I'm not just talking about general touch, unwanted touch in the world, but when we're hanging out with our friends, we generally don't touch them. You know, and it's sad. And I noticed it really quickly when we were at our first swinger party, and someone was telling me a story, and she just conversationally put her hand on my leg, and I was overwhelmed with the recognition that I'd missed this and didn't know it. And that was an eye-opening moment for me. And it really changed my outlook, you know, like now I think cuddle parties are a wonderful thing because it helps feed that touch starving, you know?
Right. And so a lot of people assume that swinging is this all or nothing enterprise, that you show up at a swinging party and everyone's just in this massive orgy. And you and I know that that's a myth, and that there's a huge range of ways of participating in a non-monogamous lifestyle. Can you give us kind of a sense of what that range looks like and how many options there are around being non-monogamous?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's
not
it's
that you another, have to catalog them all, but
it's another spectrum, and that's the wonderful thing. And really, what I one of the things I encourage people to do most is to not box themselves into what they will be doing for the rest of their swinging life or poly life or anything, because I feel very strongly that we grow up in a box, and that box is called monogamous relationship style. And when we take that risk and take that step out of the box, why on earth would we step back into another box that might be a little bigger, but it's still a box? You know, that's one of the reasons I'm both swinger and poly, because I want to develop relationships based on the needs of the relationships, rather than artificially categorize them. But in swinging, there's the two most obvious distinctions of soft swap and full swap. And a lot of people bristle at the idea that it's not called hard swap, but it's generally soft swap and full swap. Soft swap is anything up to and including oral sex with someone other than your partner. Full swap is the rest, you know, penetrative sex. But I've I host a yearly trip to Desire Resort and Spa in Mexico, which is Sandals for Swingers. It's the swinger all-inclusive resort, essentially. And what's great about hosting that trip is I get to see the spectrum. I get to see the amazing variety, because there will be people who are definitely considering themselves swingers who don't actually swap at all. They just go to clubs or places like Desire so they can have sex around other people. And then there are people whose swinging life involves just a little mutual masturbation, and then go to your partners. And then we get the actual swapping of partners and playmates. And I would consider a lot of threesomes, swinger activities. So there is any level that you're comfortable with. And one of the things that, you know, my first couple, the male half is not a great person. In fact, he's an asshole, and I didn't know that at the time. But at the beginning, he was good for me, because he made very clear that they would be playing at whatever our comfort speed was. And that's the great thing about playing with some swingers. And not every swinger is like this. I mean, just like in the real world, there are some assholes. But people playing at your speed, whatever that speed is a wonderful comfort level to go with, because then you don't have to panic that you're going to be pressured to do anything that you didn't want to do.
So a couple could totally go to an event and just watch and enjoy this is one of the things also. I think there's a myth that swinging and polyamory is all about sex, but there's this whole other social component to it where it's a lot of community and friendships. Can you talk about that element and what that's brought to your life?
Well, and that's another one of those things that really surprised me is while we may be close to friends, we are often not really close to friends, because we put a filter in. Our society definitely teaches us to filter our sexual concerns, as well as the most noticeable thing is between couples, there is often sexual tension. And that sexual tension is because even if you're really close friends, you can't say, man, you're very attractive to the wife of your buddy. You can't do that, because that's not part of the social contract. And that puts up a wall. So I've noticed that in swinging friendships, you can be a hell of a lot more open, because, I mean, once you've done the sex thing, it's really far easier to do the conversation thing. And that's, it sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? But I've noticed that, and I've always felt that a little bit. Like, I'm one of those people who believes in it's perfectly okay to have sex with friends. It doesn't ruin the friendship. And I think it improves the friendship, because it takes away the tension. And then you can talk about anything. And so I'm definitely closer to my non-monogamous friends and playmates than I've ever been to monogamous vanilla friends.
And just to throw out there, because I know a lot of our listeners are interested in this and curious, but are planning on staying monogamous, at least for the foreseeable future. My wife and I, we've both been in poly relationships. We've been in sex communities. Right now, we're in a monogamous phase. And we are very affectionate with a lot of our friends. We will cuddle with them. We'll do a massage. We do lots of hugs. We flirt. But we don't have sex with them. And that is also an option of taking away that filter. The tension doesn't mean you have to have full-on intercourse, just to throw that out there. Because I know a lot of people want baby steps into this idea opening up sexually. They don't plan on taking the full leap anytime soon, but they want to open their minds a little bit. How do you recommend kind of just starting that process, starting the conversation with your partner about how to be less rigid, how to be less tense about sexuality outside of the relationship, even if that just means permission to flirt with other people?
Well, I think that's the that's the real hump there, to turn a phrase. We've repressed any ability to flirt outside our relationship, by and large, as a society, right? And that is because of a tremendous amount of fear. And ultimately, what it comes down to is the best thing for non-monogamy is communication. The best thing for any relationship is communication. But the complexity of non-monogamy requires sort of like a master's level of communication. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have it yet, it's okay. Being non-monogamous will force you to develop it.
Right.
So just being, you know, the best game at the beginning, at the like before non-monogamy, was who of our friends would you like to have sex with?
Hmm.
With the idea that no one's having sex with anybody. But if you were to choose one of our friends, who would it be and why? And we've developed a game that my partner Ophelia and I really like to play, which is picking out her type, and she picks out my type. Mm-hmm. So if we're in a group situation, like even like at the mall, she looks for the people I'd be into, and then I can confirm or deny whether or not she's correct there, and I do the same thing. And that's a fun way to just make it playful, because swingers call it playing because we've remembered that sex is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't remember that. As much fun as they may have having sex, they're not thinking of it like that. And being playful is what keeps you young, keeps you amused with each other. You know, it's silly, but the deep relationship stuff is sometimes not as important as remembering to have fun together.
So we play that game at, you know, in public spaces too. And I'm wondering how many people are playing that game and are they choosing us? It's kind of fun to think about.
It is.
So is there any preparation other than reading your books that a couple can do before taking the plunge? So if they've decided that they're ready, they've explored it in fantasy, what's the next step? You mentioned online sites. Is there specific ones you recommend? Like, what are those first steps into this lifestyle?
Well, the best recommendation I can give you is to actually pay for a month on a swinger dating site. And I say pay for a month because sites that make you pay are less full of flakes and weirdos. I don't want to say that. There may be weirdos. But if you're paying on a month-to-month basis to be part of a website, you're less likely to just be there to set up dates and then not show up, which is a thing.
Yeah.
It's a non-opt-in fetish that some people have where they'll set up dates and just not show up. And it's like, well, great, you're getting what you want, but we are definitely not getting what we want out of this.
So important not to take that personally if it happens to you.
Exactly. It likely will happen. But we recommend Cassidy.com. And if you sign up with our website, it's lifeontheswingset.com/Cassidy. You can get a free month of service and explore the site and see if there are people in your area, which is important because not all sites have coverage, you know. But that's a number one, is set up a profile, answer the questions, actually think about what it is you're interested in, and then discuss what you will not do with your partner. Because having rules or boundaries, however you want to refer to them, is very important, because you don't want to get into a situation where somebody blows way past your comfort level and it's because you didn't talk about it.
Hmm.
But at the same time, at the same token, don't overplan it, because it's very easy to get into analysis paralysis where you just continue to run scenarios and you never actually do anything. And unless that is what is turning you on and giving you the hot sex with your partner, which sometimes it is, you want to actually make the step at some point. And I'm a big fan of the idea of, you know, how some people like to wade into the pool because it's cold and other people jump in the deep end. Okay. I think jumping in at least the middle of the pool is very valuable here, because otherwise, because it is so scary and it is so overwhelming, the amount of variety and possibility, that you can really just kill your entire mojo by overthinking it.
That's a really good idea of using the profile step and signing up for one of these websites as this discussion framework to go from fantasy to desire. What's kind of just exciting in fantasy land versus what you actually want to do together.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful.
So your first book is a how-to and talking about your own getting started in the lifestyle. Your new book is a novel. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to write a novel as your second book? And do you consider it a teaching tool?
I tried not to make it sound like a teaching tool, but I definitely put things in there that I wanted to expose people to that they may not have thought about. Like, there is a mention of the importance of using barriers, that there is no such thing as safe sex. There's only safer sex.
Way to slip that in. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I put probably more bisexual male references than people would expect. And that's because I am a bisexual male and I want visibility for bisexual men in the lifestyle. And it's a discussion that could take hours, so I won't dwell on it.
We'll bring you back on.
Perfect, perfect. I'm always happy to talk that subject. And what I very much wanted to do was present both the very positive value of swinging and non-monogamy, as well as how it can destroy your relationship. Because I think that's very important. A lot of swingers like to take the tack that, oh no, this is enlightenment. This is the next level of existence. Swingers and poly people like to take that tack.
Yeah.
And I recognize that swinging was the best decision I've ever made, and it changed my life immeasurably for the better, period. At the same time, I have had more intense conflict since I became a swinger than I ever had before.
Yes.
Because you've greatly complicated your life. And that's awesome, because it allows for that variety and unique new things for you. But it also makes it complex. So I really wanted to show that. And I think that's the best learning tool of it, is you're not going to sit down and just get titillated for an entire novel. While there is that, there's some good sex in it. You are going to see a relationship laid bare, because that's what swinging does to you. It tears you open and shows you everything, and you'd better be prepared for it, you know?
Beautiful. And where can people find this book?
They can find it at alifelessmonogamous.com, and it is independently published, so I really appreciate when people buy through my website. And to incentivize buying through my website, I've got a promo code for your listeners. Just use PLEASURE at checkout, and you'll save 10%, and you can order the ebook, a signed paperback, or pre-order the audiobook, which is actually in production as we speak.
Are you narrating it?
I am co-narrating it. The book jumps from male to female point of view throughout. And as uncomfortable as I initially was writing the female point of view, and had my crack squad of readers to tell me when I just was wrong about what the women were thinking, I very much did not feel that I could do justice for the female point of view as a narrator.
You don't have a good falsetto in you?
I don't, and I didn't want to do that thing. You know, I'm already worried about having to do the female voices in the male half, but I didn't want to affect a female persona for entire chapters.
Beautiful. So co-narration sounds like a good plan.
Indeed.
Amazing. And so you can find your work at mylifeontheswingset.com.
Well, that's the original book, actually, the first book. So I
and your podcasts and
the complication of what I have built here. First of all, my podcast and website is lifeontheswingset.com. Then my first book is mylifeontheswingset.com. Another new book is alifeontheswingset.com. And I don't know what I was thinking there, but I make the mistake all the time. So my next book is not going to have life or swing set in the title.
Perfect.
But you can find our non-monogamy podcast, which is just putting up its 239th episode.
Awesome.
At lifeontheswingset.com. You can find all my stuff at coopersbeckett.com. And you can find me on all the social networks, I think. I'm trying to keep up with what kids today are doing.
Yes.
And you can just search Cooper S. Beckett. And if I'm on that network, I'll probably come up.
Perfect. And we will link it all up at pleasuremechanics.com on this podcast show page. So you can be just one click away from Cooper's brilliance. Thank you so much for joining us. And we will have you back on to talk about male bisexuality and pegging. I hear you're a fan of.
Oh, I'm a big fan.
So are we. So we will talk about that more in the future.
Awesome. That would be great.
Thank you so much for joining us. And
oh, my pleasure.
Take care.